The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
We are in Limerick today and Hannah Quinn Mulligan is with me now, the journalist and farmer, to talk a little bit about grass-fed and what that actually means. Hannah, I have Bord Bia's website here in front of me and it says the beef sector in Ireland is rooted in grass-based production systems at farm level, with the advantage, the natural advantage rather, of the ideal climatic conditions for growing grass. The grass-based production systems found in Ireland produce healthy, natural and great-tasting beef and dairy products. And they go on to explain how you can get your little Bord Bia certified grass-fed verified sticker on your products.
You would expect a marketing board to sell something to you, though, wouldn't you?
I certainly would.
Yeah, you would. And that is what they're doing. I mean, the thing is, I'm obviously a farmer. I'm a beef and I'm a dairy farmer. And I think that Irish farming is fantastic. And like everyone listening was brought up to believe that Irish farming is the best in the world. And yet, then I went on a holiday last year to England. And what you'll notice is they say free range cows. And I was like, that's really weird. Why would you call them free range cows? Why don't you call them grass fed like we call them grass fed? And it's because the rules in England around grass fed, like having a grass fed label, are stricter than they are in Ireland. And that shocked me. That kind of shocked this, oh my okay. God, I thought Ireland was the best in the world at everything. So in England, it has to be 100% grass-fed. There cannot be any grain whatsoever going into a cow's diet, or whether she's a beef cow or a dairy cow. It has to be 100% grass. Now, that could be silage as well in winter time, but it has to be 100% grass.
Whereas in Ireland?
For dairy, it's 95% grass, and for beef, it's 90% grass. That still sounds like a lot, I know, but my issue is this. That percentage that is not grass, a huge amount of that is imported meal, okay? So imported grain. So we actually use 6 million tons of animal feed in Ireland. 4 million tons of that is imported. 1 million tons of that is soy. So that soy has now been linked, well, in UK studies anyway, to deforestation in places like the Amazon rainforest. We're also bringing in stuff like palm kernel from Malaysia to feed cows as well. Not a huge amount, less than maybe about 100,000 tons. Mm. It's still a huge amount. And yet we're marketing all of this as clean, green and grass-fed.
So is the issue with how we're marketing it or with the fact that we're importing? I mean, is it a case that we simply have to import it to feed the number of livestock we have in this country? And we just shouldn't be calling them grass-fed? Or is there a way that we can actually get them eating grass?
I think if we keep marketing ourselves as being the best in the world, then we should actually be the best in the world. And if being that, I think that would mean getting up to a standard of when we say grass-fed, that it's actually 100% grass-fed.
What stops us 100% getting to that 100% grass-fed target at the moment? And how would you get to it?
If you took out, so my dairy cows at home, I feed them meal, not a huge amount, but I still feed them some meal. If I took that meal out of their diet, their milk production is going to drop. If you take that meal out of a beef cow's diet, beef male, female cow's diet, then their production level and their ability to reach a certain target weight is going to drop significantly. So therefore, you're shaking the whole system then, and you have to rethink the whole system that we've been fed. But the whole system is going to have to change anyway. So 10 years ago, 20 years ago, this was a really cheap system. We spread chemical fertilizer on the grass to make it grow. And we imported a load of cheap meal and fed it to cows. And it worked for us in producing tons of cheap milk. But we know from stuff like the war in the Ukraine that that's not going to work for, it's going to be, you know, vulnerable the whole time to outside influences. And on top of that, then you have to think of climate targets as well. I had someone come out to the farm and do a carbon footprint for us on the cows. One of the biggest issues around the carbon footprint is if you're using imported meal. And we have all these targets to reach in agriculture. What is it, 25% reduction that we have to reach by 2030, isn't it? And then again, but no more by 2050. So that imported meal is actually adding to our carbon footprint as well.
So are we at, like in your mind, an inflection point in terms of Irish agriculture?
Oh, we've been at this point for a long time. We just keep burying our heads in the sand about it. And then on top of this, then what did we do? We introduced a protected geographic indicator for Irish grass-fed beef. And we've had it approved now at a European standard. Mm. And yet there again, it just ties into the Bord Bia standard of 90%.
But, you know, in terms of that inflection point, let's assume we stop if, you know, assume you're right, and there'll be people who text in and
they'll be very angry.
But argue
it's,
that
it's
you're
not
wrong.
Because, but I don't have, like, my issue isn't, I think Irish agriculture is brilliant, but if we're going to be the best, then we actually need
But paint a picture for me. What does the best look like? Does it, is it a smaller national herd with lower yields, but you're farming to a higher standard?
It's farming to a more exacting standard, but it has, people have taken imported meal out of their system and say replaced it with multi-species swards, with feed that has higher protein, with kind of grass supply that has higher protein in it, like clover, for example, would have higher protein in it. And, you know, it's been done at various levels, but we're just going to have to work harder because the goalposts have moved and we're not moving with them.
How much acceptance is there within the farming community of those moving goalposts? Or of the need to move with them?
Well, it's a bit like the electric car debate. Like, why would you bother when your petrol car has been getting you around Grant? You know, and it's that fear of the unknown as well. You know, is there going to be a charging point at the certain along the way that I need to charge up at? You know, there'll be farmers listening to this and thinking, she is mad. If I cut out the 2 kilos of feed that I'm feeding my dairy cows every single day, my production is just going to hit the floor and I'm not going to be able to get that back. Then I'm not going to be able to pay back my bank loans. So, but at the same time, you know, we have this mental headspace where we're farming for now and we can't farm for now any longer. We keep on going on about the custodians of the land. In 50 years' time, when our children and grandchildren are farming the land, they are not going to be able to rely on the cheap imports that we've been relying on.
See, this is why, this is the point then I often feel very sorry for individual farmers, because it's easy to talk about farming for the future, but, you know, the mortgage is due now or the bank loans are due now.
I know, and will there be a farm to farm if I can't pay that bank loan?
Yeah, exactly.
Now?
And I can see why they feel a bit put upon, like nobody else is being expected to kind of take a pay cut almost overnight to hit climate targets.
Oh, but that's not true. They are.
Like, who?
I think people are. I think people, like society, from a society level, feel a huge pressure now to take out kind of small scale home upgrade loans, whether it's to get solar panels, whether it's to put in insulation for their homes. You know, I talked to my friends, my cohort of friends, we're all in our 30s, and
a huge amount of electricity bills are going to go through the floor.
But sure, I got solar panels on the farm and put myself under financial pressure to get them, and my electricity bills have dropped. You know, some things just make good sense. And even, say, taking that imported feed out of the equation, that could actually save you an awful lot of money. If you invest that money instead into something like a clover lay, that's naturally going to give you that protein boost that you need. Perhaps that's the way forward, and that's going to make you less vulnerable as well if things like the war in the Ukraine keep going and bits and bobs like that as well.
How important is it then in terms of getting to that place that leadership is shown from, I guess we often talk about government at the Department of Agriculture, but by the likes of Bord Bia or by the big companies like Tierlawn?
Well, like Tierlawn have said, for example, and look, people are going to be, someone will know that I'm an organic farmer as well, and they'll think that, you know, that this is part of it. But organic for me is future-proofing the farm. I want to be as reliant on as few middlemen as possible. But what was interesting to me about Tierlawn was their outgoing CEO recently said that he's not interested in organic because grass-fed is doing so well for them internationally. And it is. It's doing really well for Bord Bia, and it's doing really well for all the co-ops. And they don't want to change it because they feel like it's not broken. But it is. It's cracking. It is cracking, and it's going to be a headache, not for them now. They're going to have cushy retirement funds in a couple of years' time, but it's going to be an absolute headache for farmers in 10 years' time.
Hannah, listen, thanks a million for joining us. Hannah Quinn Mulligan.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.